Ladies and gentlemen, good day, and welcome to Redington Limited Q3 FY23 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Rajiv Srivastava, Managing Director. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much, and good morning and welcome to all participants on the call. So thanks so much for joining. We just announced our results after the board meeting yesterday, and extremely pleased to report another strong quarter of sales and operating margin growth. Our revenues for the quarter were at 21,715 crores, which is a very strong, very healthy 31% YOY. The EBITDA was 622 crores, a 14% YOY, EBIT 583, 14% YOY. And so all of these numbers have been absolutely record numbers for us, the highest ever for a quarter's performance. PAT at 380 was a negative 2%. And all of this has been supported by solid execution across businesses and geographies. And on the back of that, of execution, we have been continuing to gain share and secure new opportunities in markets that we compete in. And despite an evolving macroeconomic environment and somewhat difficult conditions for the technology industry, and I will talk a bit about those later, we remain well positioned to continue to grow our business profitably by helping our customers and suppliers, helping them to navigate an increasingly complex market. Redington achieved record revenue and operating margin for the third quarter as our continued investments in improving our technology infrastructure and technology capabilities, which serve our customers and partners, in building deeper partner relationships both with the downstream partners as well as global vendor relationships, and making a breadth of offerings, which is the products and solutions and services that we bring to the market, more comprehensive than ever before, and introducing innovations in our business model, and all of those have started to pay off. Like I said earlier, this is the highest ever quarter for both revenue and operating profits. And for the first time in the history of a company, we have had three consecutive quarters of more than 25% growth. Just as an additional information, the trailing 9 months have been the highest ever 9 months of growth that the company has seen since we started operating it. Now, I can also tell you that this delivery has been largely broad-based, with all our operating regions, which is India, Middle East, Turkey, and South Asia, all contributing to growth. All theaters have been pretty robust, and the growth is well-balanced, fairly balanced, across all the different product categories that we operate in, which is telecom, mobility segment, which is enterprise products and solutions and services, cloud, and also the volume products that we do. Now, clearly the business dynamic during the quarter has been mixed. Technology demand related to work from home and learn from home has been subdued. In fact, it degrew in Q4, which is calendar Q4 of IDC. You would have followed the IDC results for the global PC industry, and that declined by 33% year on year. Smartphone shipments have declined globally by 18%. However, the demand has been extremely robust as people have started to come back to the offices, and work from home has actually started to shift to work from the office. So the hybrid environment continues, but it's more predicated towards work from the office now. So demand has been robust for those kind of workspaces. It has been very robust for data center infrastructure products, which are products of the nature of servers, storage, networking, software and security. And as the digital transformation projects have been accelerating, I talked about those in the previous meeting as well. The migration to cloud, back to office, data center procurement have all been very strong catalysts for our growth. And that, you know, when you couple that with our improved engagements with the enterprise, mid-market and SMB customers and partners, it more than made up for any other degrowth that we would have seen in the learn from home segment. So our enterprise products grew by a very, very, very healthy 65% during the quarter, and cloud grew by more than 33%. And so literally you can see that the world is shifting towards consumption of new technologies, and those are the leading indicators that we are extremely focused on and proud that we could capitalize during the course of the quarter that went by. I also want to let you know that the geographies we operate in, which is South Asia, India, Middle East, Africa, Turkey, all of these geographies are largely consumption and investment driven. You would have seen that most of the GDPs that we operate in have shown a positive growth trend. There has been a guidance. Guidance keeps going a bit up and down. The growth forecast has been reduced, but there's been a very positive growth trend from GDPs of all the countries we operate in. The governments have been a major spender, and I'll take a minute to talk about this in a bit. So clearly there has been a very mixed sort of a business climate, but negative to stable business climate, which is helping us to make sure that the digital projects that we are focused on continue to gain momentum and continue to give us the lift that we deserve. Financial situation across the world has been highly volatile, and there are obvious factors to be considered over the near term. We've all seen a very high inflation regime, which means there has been high commodity prices, an increase in interest rates. The cost of capital has gone up significantly, and that's the reason you see a very sharp difference between our EBITDA and then the PAT. So these impact demand as well as margins, impact on PBT and PAT. There has been a currency devaluation in some of the countries we operate in, Egypt, Nigeria, Kenya, Ghana. While there has been a delay in delivery of networking products, which can literally have an impact on large project business, I think the shortage situation of the technology industry has eased considerably. Over the last 6 months, it has been becoming better every month, and now we are getting to a point where it is far superior than what was when we started the year. So I see the project execution will start to improve significantly. We've also seen the oil prices to be stable at higher levels, and that positively impacts a lot of geographies we operate in. For instance, Nigeria, for instance, Middle East, a lot of those countries that we operate in, they are positively impacted because of the oil prices. So therefore, you can see that the overall microeconomic financial situation of the world has been good. Some very, very good and some not so good financial indicators. And we obviously expect these to balance out positively in favor of Redington. We will, however, be extremely watchful and cautious over the next few quarters to make sure that we are vigilant as we ramp up our business in the technologies that we are very focused on. As we project ourselves into the future, we do anticipate a demand environment which can be considered in some places, but it will be extremely robust in some other areas. You all would have gone through the budget announcements yesterday. An immense focus on digital and digital initiatives. All of these are transformation initiatives. We've seen and learned a very hard and tough way that during the COVID times and also after the COVID times, digital is the one which is the real transformer of growth for most companies and most economies. And so I really welcome the budgeting announcements which focus so much on digitalization. And I do anticipate an extremely robust demand outlook for technology products on the back of this investments and spending that the government is going to do. Some of those investments will be in really infrastructure setup and infrastructure of the technology variety. This is the tech infrastructure which goes into back-end creation of data centers, creation of capabilities and competencies, innovation funds, making sure that security infrastructure of the information is very strongly done. So all of those are going to be very, very strongly focused on. And I can also share with you my own experience of dealing with the government in the last couple of quarters in India and also in some countries of Middle East, Africa, and I was in Turkey 2 weeks ago. In each of these places, the focus of the governments on trying to make sure that they are far ahead in terms of technology, in a way leapfrogging the rest of the world from a tech perspective, is very intense. If you see near home, I do expect a very strong demand from the government on modernization of citizen services, on modernization of education infrastructure in the country from a technology perspective, on all the finance projects that the government is leading right now, the communication infrastructure and network that the government is leading right now. 5G is going to be a game changer in many ways, both from creation of infrastructure and also from fueling many other application areas that are going to be there. And defense also is going to be very strongly modernized. So we do see anticipated demand infrastructure, demand environment, which is going to be strong, and I'm hoping that continues to be robust. It will be less so in some product categories like access products, but very strong in data center, cloud services, accessories, and services around those. So we therefore expect to see reasonable revenue and margins from our growth in that, from our recently implemented operating environment improvements, amidst the backdrop of all the geopolitical and financial stuff that I talked to you about. Net, and let me conclude by saying that our strategic initiatives and our execution capability are delivering for us right now. You know, when you have such a significant deviation from what the market is or rent is, and clearly it suggests to us that the initiatives that we made are in the right direction, and that really makes us extremely optimistic about our future. So let me step back and stop over here and hand it over to all of you to give your opinions, views, and any clarifications or questions that you may have. We will be more than happy to take them on. With me in my room, I've got S.V. Krishnan, who is a Global Chief Financial Officer, and our finance leader, Deepika, as well.
Thank you very much, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Sanjay Dam from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Congratulations first for a very, very sustained, robust top-line performance. And thank you for those insights. I think we come from a very, very high base in the YOY quarter. So I would not, take too much time on, comparison versus that. But when I look at your our September June September quarter and then look at the December quarter, the gross margin has kind of changed a bit, which flows into the EBITDA margin. So if you could help us understand that bit of it, and the second part is that although the gross margin has come off by 50 bps, you've been able to hold your EBITDA margins. So I suspect that the flexibility which you took in investing into the business, existing verticals as well as new verticals, you would have calibrated to deliver that 2.7% EBITDA margin. So if you could also take us through, what to expect in the year ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, and what I'll do is I'll just give you one context, and I'll hand it over to Krishnan to take you through a bit of more details on that, Sanjay. And thanks so much for your nice words about our performance. Look, our EBITDA margin is at a fairly high 2.9% right now for at the consol level, and you're right. I think the way we are pivoting our business on the back of making sure that there are efficiencies brought into the company through the implementation of the platforms that we are doing on both on digital business as well as on a cloud business. Those are helping us. Those are strategic initiatives. They are long term. We will make the investments, continue the investments in them, because they are the ones which are necessary for future growth and future optimization of the organization. So that's a strategic sort of a two bits on that. And Krishnan, you want to give more color on how the margins are playing out here.
Sure. And before Mr. Krishnan goes and said, since we have you one bit more on the progress so far. So the investments that you have made into the business, would you say that it has kind of met your expectation, and you of course have a end point or some progress, some milestone in mind? Would you say that it's been a satisfactory progress so far? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great question, because you always make investments with an end objective in mind. And though these are always in technology industry, it's never an end. It's like always gliding towards. And gliding means is always in motion, because tech industry keeps evolving. And we would always want ourselves to be ahead of the curve, which means we are always making the right investments. We are reading the trends of the market extremely well and pivoting ourselves to the future versus being stuck in the past or stuck in the present. So I think that's the way to think about our investments. So far, the investments that we made three very clear investments. We made an investment in trying to pivot ourselves to a digital distributor, and our objective and aim is to become the best digital distributor in the world, which means anybody who wants to interact with us will have a very strong, no manual, very easy to do business with kind of an interface. The second investment we made is in the cloud, and the growth of a cloud business suggests to me that we are absolutely in the right direction on the cloud. We are adding features, we are adding functionalities, we are adding solutions and services on the cloud platform. Like I said, it's always going to be evolving and becoming better all the time, but absolutely in the right direction, because our cloud business is ramped up on the back of that platform, which means if it didn't have the platform, our cloud business will be far smaller than what it is today. And the third investment that we are making in the company is on getting our company more automated, more technologically savvy for our internal processes and systems. And all three of them, in my opinion, are in the right direction. They are bearing fruit for us right now, because we're starting to see traction on them. A good portion of our business has shifted to digital already. And I'm hoping that in the course of the next 2 quarters, more than 20% of our business will actually become digital. So I think that will be a great progress if you make that. And cloud is all, 100% of our cloud business is already on the platform. So I think those are right metrics and right indicators for us to really feel good about.
So let me pitch in on the earlier point, Mr. Sanjay. See, as you know very well, our business cannot be compared on a quarter-on-quarter basis, because the Q2 that you mentioned is basically a quarter where there are new product launches that are happening from major vendors, and also it's a period where the festive sale is aiding us in terms of better revenue and profitability. But on a year-on-year basis, yes, there is a drop. So let me explain this. First of all, in the current quarter, you would have seen that the provision towards the inventory has gone up, and I will explain that a bit. And that's the primary reason why the gross margin has come down. Having said that, even adjusting for it, there is a marginal drop of about 10 bps. This is the Q3 of last year. That's an account of how the market is, as Mr. Rajiv mentioned. Very specifically with respect to inventory provisions, we have discussed a couple of it in the earlier calls. There is some slowdown that we are seeing in the consumer business, which has impacted in terms of our inventory levels. Second, we also discussed about shortages that are there in the enterprise space. While a bit of it has got eased, But still we face shortage, and because of which we had got part of the consignments are not full, which is not enabling us to bill the full inventory to the customers. And these are with us. And some of this has resulted in higher inventory provisions, but we are quite confident in the next 2 to 3 quarters, we will find a way to sell these inventories, and in which case, inventory provision should come back to the P&L. So, in a strict sense, there is a marginal drop in gross margin, not significantly higher.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. I think other participants will probe more into this. Wish you guys all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aejas Lakhani from Unifi Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, congratulations, gentlemen, on, you know, very strong execution. Again, it speaks about the execution powerhouse that you are. Sir, a couple of questions. First being that, you know, Apple at the start of this year announced that, you know, they are putting up more staff on the retail force. So could you speak about how this impacts the domestic business? What percentage of our proportion of sales comes from Apple today for just the domestic business, if you could comment? And, you know, how are we planning to, you know, navigate this transition of Apple going direct?
Okay, thanks so much. And I think thank you so much for your nice words as well. Let me give you a sense of broader than Apple. Okay, this question about people growing brand stores and how the brand stores start to impact the rest of the providers in the market. You know, all these brand stores, and Apple is starting up a big brand store of their own. That's the reason they're going to be hiring some in-store promoters and in-store sales people for themselves over the course of next, whenever foreseeable future. And what we've seen is in most countries, and I've worked in countries like China, Japan, Australia, Singapore, Indonesia, Philippines, countries which are similar to ours and countries which are not similar to us always. Even in Middle East. Actually, Apple's opened the single largest store in the world in Qatar just 2 weeks ago. That is the single largest store of Apple, including the US. So it's a really, really massive store that they've opened up. And what we've seen is, over time, whenever you have a brand coming up like that, suddenly the entire brand gets a lift. There are more programs which are thrown into the country. There's more affordability matrices that come in. There are more financing and more OPEX which is thrown into the country to make sure that the brand continues to get a lift. We've always seen in every single country you would find that a brand of this, when this kind of a thing happens, the brand gets a lift. And I'm hoping that on the back of Apple coming up with their own store, you will get a brand lift of that nature, which means that it's good news for all of us. It's terrific news for all of us. And like I said, I've seen this in countries after countries, and I can name at least about 20, 25 countries where this sort of a thing has played out. The contribution of Apple to our revenues, Apple contribution to overall revenues is, just iPhone business is about 19% is contribution of iPhone to our overall revenues, right? And a contribution of Apple to overall Apple portfolio to our portfolio is just about under 30%. So I think, and it was higher earlier, our growth in the enterprise, cloud and all that segments has meant that this contribution, while the revenues have stayed good, this contribution has come down. So I think which is good news for us, because we are, in a way, we are trying to get into a more more diverse sort of a business that we are talking about. So that's a bit. But since your question is specifically with respect to just only domestic, only India, contribution of Apple iPhone to domestic is 24%, okay, to domestic, our domestic business is 24%, and that's pretty much where it is, it is right now at the moment, yeah.
Got it. And so what is Apple's contribution domestically? You mentioned the iPhone bit at 24. What is the Apple contribution domestically?
Apple contribution domestically is about a third of our business, yeah.
Okay. Got that, sir. Just a couple of others.
It's up and down a bit because it was the last quarter was their launch quarter. Okay, September is the launch time for them, so it goes up, and every time in Q4 it goes up a bit and then it comes down. It settles to under 30 every time there.
Got it. I show you on that. So the other bit is that you know the working capital has gone up, and it was in line with your commentary and guidance earlier. So the current working capital, are we comfortable at these levels, or do you further see working capital moving up? And Mr. Ali, just a follow up is that what specific initiatives are you driving today? And what kind of business outcomes would they have?
Yeah, look, let me give you a sense of working capital, and I'll ask Krishan also to chip in. If you recall, in the last two calls, we have been guiding that the working capital will start to normalize in the range of 28-35 days. Okay? It was around that last quarter. This quarter, it is settling at about 30 days for Redington consolidated overall. I think it's a little lower in Middle East, in South, in the rest of the world, and in India, it's about 35 days, right? So I think we are right bang in the middle of our guidance or the early part of our guidance. It will go up a bit more. We are absolutely comfortable because if you go back to the times which were pre-COVID, we were stuck with a working capital around 50 or 55 days at times and then our high 40s. And now in the range of what we are talking about, 28-35, I think it's pretty much par for the course. It might go up as well because that's the nature of the business right now, and that's the nature of the industry that or the way in which the demand is shaping up. Long-term projects. The way we try and manage ourselves, what specific initiatives we do is obviously we are all the time working with our vendors to make sure that in the project kind of a business, we work with longer cycles of payments as well, return back to the vendors so that our project receivables and payables is kind of balancing out in a good way. Your question about what kind of long-term initiatives we are working around as an organization, clearly we have a very strong strategy on how we are trying to pivot our business to the future. That strategy rests on four very consistent pillars. There is one which is all about enhancing, making sure that we have a very strong focus to our core business. The core business is what is our mothership and gives us all the growth and all the revenue. So we have to make sure we are going very strong on the core business and gaining share there. Whatever it takes to protect the base and gain share is this one part of the strategy. The second is we are trying to expand more product categories and get more technologically oriented to serve our customers better. The world of technology is really, really evolving at an extremely fast pace. So we've got to make sure that we are pivoting ourselves to the future by bringing in the best, most latest technology products into the market. And towards that extent, I don't know if you've been reading some of the reports that we are reading, releasing to the main, and some of our interviews of our senior executives, you'll find that we are pivoting ourselves to a paradigm called eliminate or reduce technology friction in the market. And this is the technology friction is the gap between the rate at which technology gets innovated, which is very fast, and the rate at which the technology gets adopted, which is slow. And this gap always has a societal and an economic impact. So the mission of a company becomes, how do we make sure that we eliminate or reduce technology friction? And that means bringing the latest technology to the market at the fastest speed possible. So that's the second one, right? Pivoting us, so there's a core and share gain, then there's a technology. The third piece is making sure that we become a business model innovator sort of an organization. And that's the reason you saw us talk about the digital platform, the aim to become the best digital platform, the best digital distributor in the world, and then the aim to become the most easy provider of cloud product solutions and services through another digital platform and Solar through another digital platform. So you're finding us innovating on the business model front, right? So that's the third piece of our strategy that we are trying to do. The fourth pivot of our strategy is making sure that whatever we do, we are absolutely operationally excellent. And I think the point which was made earlier about our strong execution stems from the fact that we have an absolute maniacal focus on being operationally absolutely excellent. So whatever it takes for us to make sure that our processes in the system align with delivering the fastest, cheapest, best to the market. Our internal processes allow us to engage with our customers and partners in the most efficient manner. So whatever it takes us to be operationally efficient is something that we are trying to do. So these are the four pillars of how we think of ourselves as we go forward.
No, that's very clear. Thanks so much for that. Ajit, just to follow up, could you speak about what is the cloud revenue this quarter? How is the execution on that front, and how you are seeing growth momentum in that specific piece?
Okay, sure, I can do that. No problem at all. Look, our cloud revenue in quarter three is 257 crores. Okay. Oh, one second, sorry, my apologies. That was India is overseas is 272. The total cloud revenue for the business is about 528 crores. 528 crores has come in at a growth of more than 33%. For the 9 months, our cloud growth has been almost about 60%. So cloud, 49% for the 9 months. I was reading from on a country level. But our cloud growth in 3 months, to be clear, 528 crores in this Q3 quarter, 33% growth for the 9 months, a 49% growth, which is very, very strong. We see the momentum on cloud continuing, and that's where our pivot is. That's the reason we invested in technology. And there are different ways of succeeding in the cloud business. And so we are pivoting our company very strongly to make sure that we can leverage the cloud, the strength of cloud, we can leverage the technological innovations that are taking place and bridge the technology divide, which is reduce technology friction in the cloud space. Yeah.
Got it.
Growth and momentum continuing very strongly, no problem at all.
Got it. Krishna, just one bookkeeping question. The in the standalone, the reported number versus what you disclose in the PPT, for the CISA piece, there is a slight difference and there is a corresponding difference in the ROW piece as well. So could you explain what is that difference?
The standalone is only talking about India distribution. CISA includes SSA, which is Singapore and South Asia. Also includes ProConnect, and we have a shared services company in India, which is called RedServe. All these are part of CISA. There will be some small difference.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one. Yeah.
Got it. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Sureka from UTI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
So my questions were on the working capital, which you partly answered. Just an observation that in CISA, we have seen a higher increase during the quarter. So is it because of our enterprise business growing faster in CISA? And the second part was on the gross debt number and how are we funding and the funding cost for the same.
Krishna, you want to take this?
Okay, sure. See, as far as the working capital is concerned, yes, there is a significant increase that had happened in India. And that increase, as you said, is also on account of mix, but I wouldn't say it's only because of that. See, we have been talking about this normalization for quite some time. It actually first happened in overseas, and we are seeing this happening in India in the last two quarters. So this is purely a normalization phase, and also coupled with that, there are two important factors which also have contributed to increase in working capital. One, the general toughness in the marketplace in the form of, as I said, in the IT consumer space, there is a softness of demand, and also on account of the fact that, there is a liquidity pressure in the marketplace. So there are certain delays from the customers, which also has enabled an increase in debtor days. Second, because of shortage in the enterprise space, there are some excess inventory that are there, which over a period of time will get liquidated. So these are some of the factors, and these are expected. So we were sure this is something that will get normalized in some time. With respect to your question on the debt portion, our gross debt is about 0.45 times to the net worth now. It is going up now today because of working capital increase across the market. We started seeing increase in terms of our debt levels. And however, we also have sufficient cash balance, and hence, if you look at the net debt equity, it's still at about 0.15 times.
Sure, sir. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Siddharth Bhattacharya from Anvil Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, please proceed.
Yeah, so a couple of questions from my end. I have seen that hardware technology has improved significantly over the last couple of decades. So has that led to longer replacement cycles, especially in the IT part of the business? What are your needs and going forward, what do you think the trend could be over here?
Maybe I wasn't able to hear you absolutely clearly, Siddharth. You mentioned hardware technology has gone up significantly.
It has improved significantly, yeah, over the last couple of decades. So the replacement cycle effectively has become longer. Is that a correct scenario to look at?
A bit, only a bit, Siddharth, because look, the replacement cycle almost always has a connotation with access devices, which is PCs, laptops, desktops, cell phones, tablets, pads. Those kind of devices are more prone to replacement because they are in the hands of individuals like you and me, even though they may be used in the enterprises. Now what happens is the refresh over here is sometimes the companies have a very strong replacement or refresh cycle policy. Some companies do it in 3 years, some companies do it in 4 years, and some companies also do it in 5 years. So there are policies, which means that those are policies for long term, and that doesn't impact the replacement cycle. But often the replacement cycle in the consumer space, which people who use for homes, is also driven by changes in technology. So for instance, if a Microsoft is sunsetting Windows 10 and saying Windows 10 is not available anymore, everybody shift to Windows 11, then suddenly you'll find that the replacement starts to happen. Or similar to those kind of things. So I think it's driven by tech advancements. If a new chip comes into the market which is extremely, extremely more powerful than the earlier ones, then suddenly you'll find that the consumer shift towards buying new. So the replacement cycle has got different contexts. Now in the data center space, in the more back-end, back-end operations where people are using hardcore enterprise-wide applications, those are the places where refreshes are more stable. They're not done just because there's a tech. They're done largely because people want to do software upgrades, or the processing requirements have gone up, or the storage needs have gone up, or the number of users in the company have gone up. And we are seeing that as the migration towards cloud is taking place, the refresh there is actually a no limitation thing right now, because in the cloud space, people are just throwing and creating more and more infrastructure to serve the customers better, because that architecture, that technology, that implementation is dramatically different from a technology device at an individual sort of a level. So I think it's got a very broad context of how replacements work here.
Sure. My next question is, I just wanted to understand your outlook on the services business. I know it is not a large part of the pie as of now, but where do you see it going with the pie?
Yeah, look, I think one of the questions which was asked earlier about where do you see your cloud business and how do you do that and how do you see your ProConnect or logistics business, which is part of my services, we do see our services business to be growing. Now, it is because we are so large in the rest of the business, obviously it's a small fraction, but in absolute sense, we do see our services business to be growing faster than any other business. So, and right now, it is services business is about 3 plus, about maybe an under 4% of my overall revenue right now at a Q3 level. Or services business, let me say this. Services as a part of my overall cloud business is about 3%. Our objective in line is to get to at least about a 10% of services business. 10% of the overall cloud business should be services business. If we get to that space, I think I will be in a very, very robust space right now. So I think services business is a strong focus both of the cloud variety as well as the ProConnect logistics supply chain variety, and we are well positioned to get to that space because we are adding capabilities and we are building competencies in that space. Yeah.
Sure. Final question for mine. We are present in geographies where there are historically there have been buying currency fluctuations. So how do we mitigate that?
Yeah, look, a lot of our countries have been currency fluctuations for a long time. We've been present in these countries for more than 20 years. Countries like Kenya, Nigeria, Egypt, Ghana, Turkey, all of these countries are subject to currency fluctuations. So is India in a bit. But we know how to manage them. A lot of our contracts in these countries run on global dollar-denominated currencies. That's the way we try and manage it. We have the ability to swing our business up and down a bit all the time. So we manage in a good way. I mean, it's not that it is a perfect world that you don't lose money ever. We are losing some money in Egypt in this quarter, so that's the reason of Egypt currency fluctuation was much more sudden and much more abrupt than at any other point in time. And you guys know the financial market extremely well, so you would know this. But we have a very good way of making sure that our business is done in dollar-denominated currencies in most countries across, and we have a way of trying to naturally swing up or swing down our business in a good way so that we can continue our growth and continue our momentum.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen, for answering my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, you may press star 1 to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management will be able to answer questions from all participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Mohit Khanna from Banyan Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Congratulations, sir, for a very good execution for this quarter. I have a follow-up on what Sanjay Dam asked regarding the inventory write-off in the enterprise business that you have mentioned. And I just wanted to know that what is exactly the policy, because is the inventory write-off is due to the obsolescence of those products? And if those products are not obsolete, then why write it off? It is just a demand supply sort of mismatch, and it could go off anyways.
Okay, it is provision, and there are rules you follow for provision, and I'll let Krishna take this. But I just wanted to make sure I clarify your misconception. It is not a write-off, because these are meant for end customers. And assuming the customer order has network, server, and storage, and you haven't got the storage equipment, you have got network and server, you can't give it to the customer. So it lies with you. But the moment the balancing equipment comes, it will go back to the customer. It will be written back into a book. So it's not a write-off. It's it's just a provision, temporary provision, waiting for the equipment to come. And those provisions have norms to follow. So, Krishna, you want to add that?
Absolutely. So I think it's a very important clarification. So these are provisions. See, we follow a consistent provision methodology. And this is a time-tested one. And we have a model that is agreed the auditor. And that's something that we want to follow in a strict sense. If there are any stock buildups and those are aging, irrespective of reasons, the provisions will kick in. If you look at the enterprise example that we are discussing, whenever it gets sold, it should happen in the next 1 or 2 or max 3 quarters, it should come back. There are also some provisions on account of excess inventory buildup. Entirely it's not because of enterprise. So in those cases, while we will seek support from the vendor in terms of liquidation, we also need to be prepared if there is any dilution in the value of our selling price. So this is a very, very, very consistent policy, and all the constituents of Mohit are very comfortable with. So I only said all the constituents are comfortable, and this is something which is more time-tested, and hence it has got provided for. But we will do whatever is required to be. These come back into the system.
Yeah, and in the enterprise business, you hardly have a write-off of this nature. Never you have a write-off. It's just a provision, and which is consistent with our corporate governance policies.
Understood, sir. So just one more question from my side. Can you give me a breakup of how much was the government-related growth and how much was the consumer-related growth and the corporate-related growth in this quarter? And what is the outlook on that?
I don't have a government-related growth number specifically for you, Mohit. We can get back to you later. Okay. On the growth on the volume, which is consumer product, is like a volume product. It's about, see, in India, in India the consumer growth was negative. In Middle East, Africa, overseas business, it was plus 9%. So that's the way it is. Overall, it will be about in the range of about 5% will be the consumer growth.
Right. And the corporate spending, the enterprise business?
The enterprise business, we mentioned to you that enterprise business for the Q3 was a 65% growth.
Right. And okay. Thank you so much.
Mr. Khanna,
and this will have enterprise and government. So
yeah.
All those.
It will have government as well included in the enterprise. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'll get back to you.
A reminder to all the participants, may we request you to limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, please rejoin the queue. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Gupta from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. I have just one small question. So your finance cost seems to have gone up a lot in the last 2 quarters. Can you just explain what's happening there? I'm assuming there would be some policy loss there, but if you can help us understand better and also give a bifurcation of letter forex loss versus interest expense.
Rahul, it is primarily because of increase in debt on account of increase in working capital, which we discussed. As I mentioned in one of my earlier answers, we are seeing a positive debt situation across all our markets. And you know well, now the interest rates are going through the roof, both in India as well as in other part of the world. Our interest rate in Turkey is well over 20%. So some of these factors are resulting in higher interest cost. It would not be proper to compare it with the earlier years, because earlier years, all of us know, was not a sustainable level. And this is the way it is. Once if the interest rates, it comes down, we should see some better improvement in terms of interest costs.
Sorry, can you just remind me what is the total gross debt we have now?
Gross debt is about 3,000 crore end of December.
Okay, 3,000 crores. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Riya Rohira from NK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for giving me an opportunity. This is Priya here. I just, going by the vendor concentration which you have, clearly there seems to be some new vendors which is becoming more strategic if I look at others. While across Apple, HP, Dell, Lenovo, Samsung, there's been growth. Is there something which we should be aware about whereby certain vendors could become very big, like the other top 4? That is first question, and this could even be a cloud player or a major enterprise player, so if you can highlight. My second question, since permitted only 2, is on the Q3 seasonality. Generally, we've seen because of Apple launch in September, Q3 is typically high on mobility. So that seasonality, any color if you could share, would be good.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. Look, let me give you the answer first on the vendor concentration, because that's a great question, and I think it's important for us to understand the way in which the markets are shifting, the technology buying is shifting. Now, because we said that Q3, our buoyancy was a hugely driven thing by the enterprise value product segment, which is the data center, the software, cloud buying, those kind of buyings were very strong in Q3, and hence, there is a shift. Apple is not an enterprise player, so obviously, clearly, there is a bit of a rebalancing of a portfolio. It will continue, Priya. It will continue because as the world goes towards more and more digital transformation projects, as the world continues to shift towards more cloudification, you will find that the enterprise variety of products, which is server, storage, networking, software, SaaS products, which is software as a service, and the services within the cloud portfolio will start to become more dominant. And that's what we are seeing. And we've been seeing this over the last couple of quarters, not just one, but over the last many, many, many quarters that we've been seeing this shift in buying of customers or shift in technology deployment towards this kind of a technology behavior. That's one thing which is very, very strong. Your second point about how Apple is from a seasonality perspective, and how the phone business is. Look, typically this quarter of Apple is always going to be a strong quarter because there is a new launch always happens. iPhone 14 got launched recently, and that launch is always, which gives a bit of a lift in terms of how the Apple business. So our Apple iPhone at a consolidated level across the world is about 19%. and Apple at the overall worldwide level is just about 30% for us. And like I said earlier, it stays in the range of less than 30 in most quarters. In the launch quarter, it always goes up towards that level. So it's just a global sort of a reflection of how consumer demand peaks up for new brands and new models of Apple when it gets launched in the month of September, October. And other times it is more stable. But the shift, your first question is far more insightful because that shift is real. That shift is in the marketplace taking place towards a lot more customer. And even though the PC industry degrew in Q4, we were able to grow so healthy overall just because we pivoted our company towards what's going on. We pivoted our company towards insights from the market, and hence we capitalize on the growing trends here.
Sure, Rajiv, this is helpful. So my main objective was obviously to understand, is there some enterprise product names which we should track apart from the top five, which would suddenly become strategic and come in the top five at some point of time, because that is how the business grows. And over the years, we have seen you introducing products ahead of the growth in the market. So in that knack of understanding or knowing on products which can grow in the market is something I was looking forward to.
Yeah, Priya, I think, and that again is a very sort of good way to think about how the market is shifting. So if cloud is becoming more sort of important in our portfolio, then companies like Amazon, for instance, and Google and Microsoft become more important in the cloud space. Because data centers are more important, then companies like Hewlett Packard Enterprise and EMC become more relevant. Because data centers are important and networking is such a critical one, Cisco becomes a very important player for us. So you'll find that there will be shades and differences. I think you guys might want to think about how you want to take a look at the way the tech industry is evolving and pivot yourself towards that and rather than getting guided only by historical trends. History is a great way of learning. But I think there is a huge amount of shift that is taking place in the technology industry. So if I were you, I would also start to think about how the server industry is shaping up, how the network industry is shaping up, how the cloud and the SaaS product industry is shaping up. You know, those would be the ones which I would start to think about a lot more.
Sure, I think that's helpful. I'll come up with a follow-up if I promise.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Athreya from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted your comments on the logistics business. So, I mean, it has only seen a mid-single digit growth this year. So what are we doing? What is causing this and what are we doing to, you know, fast track the growth?
Okay, you're right. I think logistics business has grown 7% over the course of the last 9 months. And what we're trying to do is, couple of very different things. It's a business which is a largely B2B business. It's a back-to-back business, business-to-business business in logistics. And what we're doing is we are, like I said, two things. One, we are adding a new set of offerings to our portfolio. We were largely in the warehousing business, and we are now adding a range of transportation business also to it. And that's how we are trying to increase our range of offerings to the customers so that you become more relevant, because customers are now coming back, and there's an insight from the market. Customers are coming back and they say, look, don't give us only storage warehousing solutions. Give us more than that. Become an end-to-end supply chain provider for us versus being a logistics provider. So I think we are pivoting our company or shifting our company towards becoming a lot more supply chain dominated than just one function of logistics. That's one. The second thing that we are trying to do is the logistics business, supply chain business, is becoming extremely technically dominated. Okay, you add more features, functionalities from a tech platform perspective to make sure that you can be far more easy with our customers. And you know, the courier business is all tech because they can come and you can receive an equipment. They give you a sign off on the in a digital way, and so it's very digital oriented. But not the warehousing, not the transportation. All those businesses have to become far more technically oriented, which is what we are pivoting towards. So we've taken this. We are taking over the course of next one or two quarters to make sure that we are upping our technical capabilities to be able to provide services of this nature to our customers. The other thing which is, and these two are more sort of the capability creation that we are doing. The other thing that we are doing and investing time and effort on is making sure that our market segmentation model is the best and the most perfect model. There are segments in the market which lend themselves easily to us and they are more profitable and we will go there. There are segments in the market which are less profitable and we don't have a natural right to win in those spaces and we are not going to go there. So we are decommitting business to some places and we are really, really in a very good phase of consolidation. And I feel very optimistic about the fact that this phase of trying to pivot yourself on the right set of customers with the right profitability is the right way to go forward. So that's how we see our logistics business. Over the near term, we have a 3-year plan on that and it's going to be very, very robust, very aggressive growth on our logistics business because it is a sunrise industry. It is an industry which will continue to be extremely growth oriented and we've seen in the COVID times how supply chain is such a pivotal factor for most companies to link on to.
Sure, sir. That was very helpful. My second question is on, you know, our top vendor, that is Apple's, you know, growth. So if my calculation is right, we are growing at low double digits. But based on news articles, we know, we can see that, you know, their growth is much higher in India as well as maybe in the Middle East as well. So are we like losing market share there or wallet share rather?
In Apple? No, I don't think so. Yeah. I think Apple grew. I know I had a quarterly business review with the Apple global leadership just 2 weeks ago. They grew 8%. So we are obviously growing faster than them.
Okay, thank you. And just one clarification on the debt and interest costs. Do we expect it to remain in this level or maybe increase going forward?
It can increase, some bit. Because we don't think the interest rates have reached the peak, but over the next 2 quarters, it should start coming down.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You know, the way to think about interest rate, the way to think about this would be, take a look at what happened pre-COVID and during COVID and now. Then you get a whole pattern to the industry, the way the industry has been operating. It was much higher earlier. We are at much lower levels than where we were in pre-COVID levels. So, you know, while the number 3,000 may look high and, you know, all those things, but these are much lower than where we were. So I think we're in a very, very healthy state right now. And our endeavor has to make sure that our operational excellence efforts make us stay at the right levels.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhwani Shah from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Just one question. On the provisioning of inventory and receivables, could you help us with the percentage?
Can you repeat? We couldn't hear the question, please.
Yeah, the provisioning of inventory and receivables, can you help us with that percentage for the quarter?
Okay. For the quarter, 0.34% is a provision for inventory and the provision for receivables, just in a minute, I'll tell you. Is about 0.03%. So overall together is about 37 bits. And you know well, in the past, if you look at the long-term, the same provision percentage, it would be about 15 to 16 bits. So there is an addition of 20 bits on account of these two in the current quarter.
All right. We must done.
Any further questions, Ms. Shah?
No, thank you.
Can we?
Okay, look, I think we are on the time and I got to rush for another meeting now. But thanks so much, everyone on the call. Thanks so much for joining the call and for your nice, well-rounded questions, very insightful on how we're trying to operate. And like I said earlier, it's a very, very interesting time in the industry when tech is pivoting to a completely different ballgame altogether. And we seem to be running ahead of the curve to make sure that we capitalize on the technology investments and the tech directions that the world is taking in a very, very good way, bringing variety of ways in which we reach our customers through omni-channel experiences by creating innovations in the business models, by making sure we do everything possible to build capabilities and reduce or eliminate technology friction in the industry and for the customers. When you eliminate technology friction, the customers become more efficient, more productive. There is an economic value to it and there is a societal value to it. So I think we are doing, trying to do everything possible in our arsenal to make sure we are staying ahead of the curve. And that's a reflection in our results, that in a market which has been very steady or degrowing over the last couple of quarters, we have kept up momentum and grown 31% this year. So I think a lot of things are coming together and I hope that we can continue this momentum. Thank you so much for joining the call. And please feel free to reach out to us in case you have any supplementary or additional questions.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of Redington Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your line.